Welcome to a psychodelicious conversation on mental health issues and trends from three local mental health professionals in the greater Lansing area. I'm Michael Stratton, LMSW.
And I'm Morgan Bowen, PMHNP.
And I'm Melissa Black, PMHNP, and we're here to provide you with a deep dive into the human experience of consciousness and beyond.
Our aim is to be educational and entertaining, so just kick back and open your ears and your minds.
Hey, I'm Mike Stratton.
And I'm Morgan Bowen.
And I'm Melissa Black.
Producer, Dedalian.
Well, hi, Dedalian.
And I only have to go by Dedalian, so.
There's another Dedalian I know.
This is part two of our conversation on resolutions and
goal setting. Yeah. So this is my topic, Morgan's topic. So we're going to talk about more specific to our practices and mental health generally, how goal setting affects that. So. All right, go ahead. You guys start talking. Yeah.
Oh. One of Morgan's resolutions, not to talk as much.
Exactly. Oh.
Kidding.
One of the things that I'm interested to hear what you guys think about this. So, you know, working with folks with chronic mental illness, you know, if someone comes to me and they have chronic depression and they're like, well, my goal is 0 out of 10 depression. I don't want to feel depressed anymore. Mm-hmm. So then we work on like, okay, is that reasonable? Mm-hmm. Like, is there a chance that you will have 0 out of 10? And someone brought this up to me recently where they felt that maybe my approach of normalizing a 2 to 4 out of 10 mm-hmm. depression was toxic.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I didn't feel that was toxic. I felt
toxic
like
is a strong word.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, but especially like the world and like all the things, people's lives are very hard. Our mm-hmm. society is very hard. Like, I don't know if anyone would never feel stressed or upset mm-hmm. or sad or depressed at some certain mm-hmm. point of time. Mm-hmm. So anyway, my approach has been, hey, let's normalize making this a reasonable goal. So like 0 out of 10, if you've been depressed your whole life, maybe that's not reasonable.
Well, I think it speaks to meeting the patient, you know, meeting the person where they're at. And so somebody with chronic depression, I mean, that is a really hard and very difficult illness. Yeah. And this is depression. I'm thinking depression where somebody has had it for their whole life,
right,
or, you know, a significant part. It may get better. There, you know, episodes improve, but maybe there's a residual component to it. Treatment resistant depression, we call it in the fancy words.
Yep.
And it's a very frustrating illness. And working with folks, they're frequently just, you know, they're unhappy that the treatment is not more effective. Mm-hmm. And so that can sometimes be a difficult part of the relationship where it's like, well, you know, maybe this is the best that we can do at least right now. And we need to like manage expectations kind of. That's sort of
so,
the language.
Yeah,
that
the
I
first
think.
Thought that I have with it is I might do like a double sided reflection with that of on the one hand saying, what a great goal, you know, that you the depression's really been very painful for you. Mm. You want this out of your life. And at the same time, you know, everything exists on a continuum. So it's probably not like you're going to come in next time, you won't be depressed at all. But the idea of making some headway in mm-hmm. it sounds like that's the first step. And what would that look like? How would we know that? And also, you know, there's depression, but there's also sadness. Does that mean you'd never be sad? Does that mean you'd never have a feeling of grief when you lose something or somebody? Does that mean, I mean, there's part of this that emotional state is normal.
Right.
So maybe we do a better job of distinguishing, I'm sad today because this happened, as opposed to like, I just didn't feel like I had any energy today.
Right.
You know, that sounds more like depression, you know. So just a couple thoughts off
you're
the
so
top
good,
of my head.
Mike.
That's
you're
so good.
So like, good. Isn't it great?
So then I'll tell my
I'm a
therapist.
Yes.
With a lot of experience. You've done this for a long time. What is your guys' approach to identifying goals in treatment? How do you navigate through that?
You're looking at me. I'll tell you what I do. First, I hear the person's story. And I've mentioned this in a previous podcast, but I want to know who they are without the issue that they came in with. I know you came in here because you're experiencing a lot of trouble, and I want to talk about that. But first, I also want to talk about who you are mm-hmm. without that problem. So I want to get a really good sense of their of their whole life and also what they love to do, because that's probably going to be incorporated in it.
Now, can you do that all in one session, or does that
It's ongoing. I mean, that occurs over the several sessions, but that's like ground that you stand in. I want to learn some basic things about them, and then, okay, tell me what brought you in today. I really want that in the first session as well. And then by the end of the first session, I will usually say something like, at the end of our working together, and whether that's in 5 weeks or in 5 months or a year, at the end of that, and you walk out of here and you say, you know what, I think I got what I was looking for. What would be different about your life? So I put it in that way, what would be different about your life? And then we break it down into specific, okay, you'd be less depressed. What would that look like? What would be different? What would you be doing different? How would you feel different? What would your relationships be like? You know, let's start to break it down in those little pieces that we can kind of measure. We can
bring it away from like kind of a general concept into like, you know, something more tangible.
A functional goal. In nursing, all of the goals when we're trained, I mean, it's like they're about function. Can you get out of bed? Can you know, but I also see that like very much transfers to folks with mental health issues as well. So I think I tend to focus a lot on functional goals with people. But another, and these are pieces of feedback from another clinician, not from a patient, where someone said, and this is just coming up now, so I'm glad that I'm saying this on the podcast. I didn't plan on it. Like, well, our society wants us to overfunction, so making functional goals is toxic.
Okay. Yeah,
that was my reaction as well. I was like, I don't know what to.
That's so interesting. I mean, and it's true. I mean, well, I'm thinking, you know, I used to do nursing education, clinical instructor. This is for undergraduate is what I'm thinking of. And so nursing students and, you know, it's kind of it's a different way to think about, you know, how it is that you work meaningfully with somebody to reach goals. How do we track that? How do we, you know, nursing is very much about that. And some of that is, you know, very not sexy, you know, it's
right.
Like the kind of boring guts,
of
whatever. But you know, people frequently will be like, well, I want, you know, what can we expect? What is reasonable to expect for this person? What do you want to help them achieve? And a lot of people had a lot of difficulty. And oftentimes it would be these very over the top things that, you know, we're talking about the next like 4 hours here. Like, yes, all those, you know, reaching the pinnacle of health is awesome, a great thing, but I'm not sure that that's totally possible. It's definitely not possible right now, but somebody with COPD is not going to be playing, you know, professional tennis tomorrow.
Right. We're going to improve, you know, acid-base balance in the body by 2 points or something like that.
And I'm very much a meet the person where they're at. What is success mean for you? What is it that you're, you know, what is it that you're looking for, you're hoping for? You know, it's a little bit different for Melissa and I because we primarily do medication management. And so it's very diagnostic. But I think that one of the things I respect about both of you guys is that you do the connection to goal setting keeps treatment effective and keeps it grounded in progress.
Absolutely.
Yeah, whereas I think sometimes there can be a world where it's just sort of like ongoing and we don't really know what we're doing anymore and we're just talking.
Right.
And, I mean, you hear that a lot from people. You know, we hear that a lot, I think, from people. Well, we just, you know, what are you doing in therapy? Oh, we're talking about problems.
Someone called it cows, like getting stuck in a cow's loop, crisis of the week. And again, that's like definite. I've heard that more on the therapy end of things, but I will always ask the person, right? Like getting back to what you actually asked me and not asking questions about silly things.
I like silly things. I know.
Is just truly asking them, what are your goals? Like, what do you want? And then, you know, I don't think it's toxic to try to find a way to make those like reasonable, actionable, measurable, you know.
Yeah, well, let's talk about SMART goals. I mean, that's one of, well, Mike, do you have anything to say before we?
I was thinking a couple of different things. One was I was thinking of different therapists I've heard who will open a session with, how can I help you today? And I don't do that. I usually I usually, there's a little bit of small talk.
The burger fries.
Often, yeah, often it has to do with the weather, you know, or like, how is it out there or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they sometimes you can tell what kind of a mood a person is in just by the way they comment on the weather.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But pretty early on, I'll say, how's life? That's almost always what I do is how's life? And then I track what the themes are that we usually talk about. And I'm usually pretty good at like, last week we were talking about this thing going on with your mother or this thing at work or how's that going? Or, you know, so I'll be trying to track this ongoing story, if it's resolved, if it was something that was a big worry or if it's, you know, and how it relates to whatever goal it was that they wanted to. I said, so you wanted to be more confident, and it sounds like that situation at work, you acted more confidently. So that shows real progress, doesn't it? And that's what I'll put in the note afterwards, mm-hmm. you know, the little mm-hmm.
justify, note to justify to the insurance company that you deserve to be paid.
But speaking of which, I got to tell you, this is a crazy story. This maybe it's too much to get into, but I've been audited by the insurance companies twice in my long career. Mm-hmm. And one time somebody came to the office and they said, we want four charts. And I had four charts, you know, and I knew they were coming. So I had time to work on them. I gave them the four charts. And they came back and they said, these three charts were great, but this one was empty. I gave them an empty. That was funny. It wasn't intentional. I think it was my subconscious, you know, middle finger to them. Yeah.
That is funny.
They passed me anyway.
They passed you. That's interesting that they came to your office.
Yeah. This was
old school where they're like, very old dig school. Out the files.
Yeah.
Well, so SMART goals are something that we talk about. I mean, I used to teach this, and we learned about it in nursing school, and mm-hmm. I think it's used in a lot of different. I mean, first of all, America, I would say Western culture is very productivity goal, like. How do we know that we're improving? Did we, you know, make more money this year than we did last year? Did we decrease overhead? Did we, you know, so I think invested in our lives is such a sense of like, we have to do better. We have to do better. We have to, you know, increase efficiency. So I do think that that draws us away from, you know, what we kind of talked about in the last episode, that lived experience of just kind of moving through authentically or without a sense of like, I have to be doing something.
Yes.
But in, you know, a treatment perspective, it's important to have some guideposts so that, because I think we've all probably been in situations where it's like we're kind of rehashing and talking about the same thing that we, you know. And maybe that's a flag of this is you home.
It's well, there was a therapist that used to say, you know how in life sometimes it's the same old thing over and over, and other times it's one damn thing after another. Mm-hmm. He said, what we're trying to do in therapy is to get to the point where it's not the same damn thing over and over, it's one damn thing after another. So that the whatever it is, the thing that's repetitive gets resolved enough that you can go on to the next problem. Ah. Because that's life. There's always going to be an issue. There's always going to be a problem. The four of us sitting here could all mention the top three challenges we got in our lives right now. Mm-hmm. And they're there. Well, there's more than that, but the top three, it just is, you know. That's part of life is there's going to be issues, there's going to be problems, there's going to be things.
I'm really glad you said that. That's such a great statement.
That's a good way
to really
put it.
I really like that.
Yeah.
I've never heard it put quite that way before. It's, you know, when we, in relationships, right, if you have the same fight over and over and over again, like, okay.
That's an issue.
Yeah, well, in my relationship, I mean, it's like when you strip it down, it's like the same dynamic.
Yes.
You know, it's like different fights, but, you know, kind of the same dynamic. We have been in couples counseling, my husband and I, and I'm thinking of goal setting and couples counseling.
You know, we should have warned Melissa. We almost always end up talking about our spouses. Oh. Yeah.
I warned Ryan. Yes.
Ryan we went knows. Into goal setting in couples therapy, and he's got to change. Something's going to have to happen over on this side of the room. It's really a big problem.
Setting goals for your spouse.
Yes, I'm good with that.
I would like you to... This is an I statement. Yes. I would like you.
I don't know if that's how that's supposed to work,
yeah,
Morgan.
Well, it turned out it's not.
Yeah.
You can't go into any communal therapy expecting anyone to change. But back to SMART goals. So,
What does it stand for?
So SMART is an acronym for those that are following along. Specific, measurable,
actionable.
I've heard it different ways.
Okay.
Actionable or attainable. Realistic.
And yeah, there you go.
Time sensitive is
timely.
Yeah, timely. Like so that there's some sort of. So instead of, you know, I want to stop drinking.
Specific, measurable, achievable, attainable. Oh,
It's a slash.
Very good. Relevant, not realistic, but relevant.
Relevant. Yeah, I've seen it both ways with that too. So, this goes back to, I mean, there are various goal setting theories, you know, like models and
leadership, organizational
quality improvement. Like, we want to hit these things instead of just kind of like waiting. WADING through the abyss, trying to make something better.
If you cross dash that with Prochaska and DiClemente's stages of change, you can say if you're not making headway in something, you can say, well, the client had been in
pre-contemplation.
They've gone from contemplation into pre-contemplation. They were thinking about making this change. Now they're not so sure it's necessary to make that change.
Yeah.
So
part of my career is in addiction, medicine. And so I work at a substance abuse residential facility doing evaluations. And so that comes into, the stages of change with moving out of an addiction, a substance use disorder. And frequently pre-contemplation.
Yes.
Or in my life, when I encounter somebody who's pre-contemplation, we're not in the space to try to change right now.
Right, right.
And so I love the pre-contemplation, contemplation, what is it? Then it's action, and then it's maintenance, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Decision or...
So
that doesn't have an easy acronym, does it?
No, it doesn't. Okay.
Just stages of change.
Stages of change, Dedalian will put it in the show notes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what are you talking about?
It's important for, goal setting because there's different, when we're thinking clinically, if somebody's in pre-contemplation, meaning they, say it is like an alcohol issue, they have consequences in their life, their people in their life have told them, but that they should stop drinking, but they just really don't think that there's a problem. It's everybody else's problem, and so frequently, I think in all of our lives, it'll be, somebody will be like, well, can you talk to this person about, their drinking problem or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And if the person does not think that there's a problem or that they don't want to change, I mean, you can really talk till you're blue in the face, but maybe there'll be an impact, but it's not going to be then and there.
No.
It's going to be maybe over time. So we do kind of think about goals. So if you're working with somebody who's in pre-contemplation, the goal is really to help facilitate contemplation. Let's talk about things in a way that maybe we can jiggle some things loose that, maybe there is an issue. You have to think there's an issue for anything really to change. Right. I can't really tell you. I mean, I could.
So an example,
it's not gonna be helpful.
An example that comes to mind for me would be, I remember working with a college student who was not attending classes, but they wanted to start attending classes. They wanted to get, they wanted to finish their semester. They were also smoking a lot of pot, but they were in pre-contemplation about quitting pot, which is what they were, in their dorm room playing video games and smoking pot all day.
Sounds like college.
So the idea of, would you like to try an experiment to see if you didn't smoke for just a few days? Do you think that makes it easier to go to class or more difficult to go to class? Let's try that as an experiment. Would you be willing to try that? So they might not be open to quitting pot, but to the idea of engaging in an experiment to see if it changes, then they're into contemplation or action. on that one. So,
so is that preparation or action right there that you're talking about?
That's moving someone through the stages into the point of action, like to consider it, to contemplate it even. And if they say, you know, I'm not so sure about that, to say, well, would you think about that this week? So it's basically asking someone, will you be in contemplation stage this week to think about it and see if just our conversation makes it easier to go, even if you still smoked every day just exactly the way you do, but does that make it easier just even thinking about that? Does that make it easier to go to class or more difficult? And then come back and talk about it. And if they come back and they say, I did think about it and I did keep smoking, but I didn't go to class. It's like, okay, well, what's the next step then? What if you smoked every day but smoked after you got back from class? What would that be like? How about that as a step in between, you know? And so I knew a kid also who he would get high first thing in the morning as he drove into high school, and he could barely get through the first hour. And it was a big deal for him to wait until lunch hour to get high. And then he got to the point where he would only get high after school, and then he and then, you know, within like 4 months, he had stopped smoking altogether.
That's awesome.
Tiny little steps.
So kind of two different ideas from a clinical perspective. Like, so SMART goals is a way of developing actual goals, you know, that you can document and, you know, you can work with the client on something. Whereas the stages of change is where is the client at? And when I am, when we are creating goals, making goals applicable to whatever stage of change they're in. So if somebody's like pre-contemplation, like Mike was just explaining, versus somebody is ready to stop smoking weed. So it's like, okay, like it's go time. Let's talk about, you know, some things that we can do. Maybe for, in our case, it's, you know, are you depressed, or, you know, is there something we can do with medication to, you know, assist, you know, that kind of thing. So that's a good review.
Yeah, I like applying the both SMART goals and the stages of change to like any behavior, you know, like I feel like it's relevant, whether it's, you know, addiction related or relationship related.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I did take the conversation. We took the conversation in a very substance use, but it's very applicable in that. So how do you think people in their own lives, like if we kind of opened it up outside of just treatment, like how can these concepts be used for people to achieve their dreams?
I was just thinking, why don't we use the things that we talked about at the beginning of the first and try to figure out what stage of change we're in with those.
Who
wants to go first?
Well, Dedalion.
We all looked over at Dedalion. Okay.
I mean, I gave you words, right?
Authentic confidence.
I would say, I don't know that this really applies to the stages of change or whatever it is.
You're trying to reach a space, like a space, like a state of identity,
a
or
state of being.
That is correct. And I suppose you could say that, because I also talked about the meditation, while that isn't a resolution for me to try to consistently meditate, I do feel like it's kind of contributed towards my objective of being authentically confident. And by that, I mean, I know when I was very good about keeping it as a part of my daily activity before, I found myself in a different place, and then I kind of veered away from it. And so I'm trying to bring that part of me back, a little bit more centered, a little more. It seems to help me. I don't know why. You know, I mean, I think most people who do meditation know that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's very common to go in and out of that, you know, to be.
Yes.
I mean, you kind of.
Because life gets a little bit busy, you lose track, and then there's this point where you realize, wow, I really haven't been doing that much anymore.
So I would say you're back in, you know, action, trying, you know, establishing. If you're working to establish a consistent practice of, you know, with meditation, that's an action space. And then once you get there, it's maintenance. So you've made the change. How is it to maintain where you're at? And using what you've learned about your previous experience, that kind of, you know, when it fell by the wayside, how do I troubleshoot that?
And though I don't really talk about it much, I will at this moment in time. I'm a smoker. And one of the things that I've at least gotten to the point to where I'm realizing that that's, like, there's times I just don't want to, And in addition to that, I would say I'm in that contemplation stage. Like, but it's also that thing where I've quit several times before. Mm-hmm. I've been through this over and over and over. And that's why one of the reasons why I was asked about resolutions. I'm like, oh, yeah, quit smoking, sure. And it's something I've done before. So I did.
You don't have a quitting problem. You have a starting problem.
Starting?
Ah. Yeah.
How do you mean?
You know how to quit. You've done it.
Yes.
The trick is to not start.
Again, yes.
That's your problem, is starting.
Yes.
Just identify it as that.
And it is, out of anything in my life, it is the one thing that I always struggle with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are plenty of other things I could walk away from. I think I've told you guys before, I'm a huge Mountain Dew drinker. I can go without Mountain Dew for a long time. I love caffeine, I love coffee, but I can go without those things. It doesn't really bother me to give those up. For some reason, smoking has always been an issue for me.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it has to do with growing up in a household full of smokers.
Yeah.
You know, that of course was back in the day when there was no going outside to smoke. You sat at the dinner table and lit one up. And, that was a common practice at my house. So,
well, as a former smoker, I can definitely relate, and we can also talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Most smokers know what it's like.
Yep. I just hit 10 years without it. And it truly has. Thank you. Thank you. Blood, sweat, tears, not starting though, not picking it up, not going out, and getting mad about it. But constructively mad is hard. I've never been constructively mad about anything else, but I got to that place with it.
What was your goal? What was your New Year's?
So my goal is still, I think, to spend more time in my personal life versus professional life. And then reading 55 books, that's really easy to measure.
Yeah,
that's
you've got the measure already.
Yep, right. I've got the Goodreads. But the other one, I have to kind of do a review every week or every day. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, am I actually meeting my goal? Like, am I overworking? Did I add too many appointments in?
Like hours that you spend working?
It's like not seeing appointment times go into my blocked time off.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of what I'm looking at now.
Yeah. For me, it was disciplined or consistent. I think it professionally. And so that week review, I do block things out by week. So I have, I do have a goal to have, like charting completed by the end of the week and having, reviewing kind of the time that I spent with clients, if there's issues. So every, having a benchmark of week to week, kind of adjusting or recognizing what went well, what didn't go well, and sort of adjusting at that point.
I'll use AI to help me.
We will never see Mike again.
Yes.
They're taking over his brain. A Psychodelicious conversation is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is no substitute for therapy and should not be treated as such. If you feel a need for real therapy, you should consult your local provider, Google Therapy, or therapist in your area. Check your community mental health or a suicide hotline if you are feeling suicidal.
Mike, Morgan, and Melissa welcome your questions, feedback, or dilemmas. Feel free to send your emails to psych.delish@gmail.com. That's psych.delish@gmail.com.
The views expressed on this podcast are solely the opinions of Mike Stratton, Morgan Bowen, and Melissa Black, and do not reflect the views or opinions of any site broadcasting this podcast. Replication of this podcast without written permission is strictly prohibited.